A rally in March for International Workers' Day in D.C., and Verizon workers enter the fourth week of their strike, vowing to reject takebacks and cuts from the corporation.
Verizon wants to be able to send their workers at least 50 miles away from home for a period of 4 months at a time, and this is at the expense of the technician. They also want to stop paying the retirees' health care. Somebody fought for this for us to have it. We don't want to see any cutbacks.
All that and more coming up. And welcome to On the Ground, Voices of Resistance from the nation's capital on 89.3 WPFW, your Pacifica station for jazz and justice and so much more. I'm Esther Averam. Well, another jam-packed show for you today. It's May 6th, and so today we're going to bring you voices from May 1st, May Day, International Workers' Day here in D.C., and in the second half, we'll hear from a local leader of Verizon workers who are entering the fourth week of their strike. 39,000 Verizon workers are on strike from Massachusetts to Virginia, but their struggle for labor rights is getting very little mainstream attention. So as always, we have a lot for you coming up, starting with some more news making our headlines. Verizon workers and May Day marches aren't the only workers taken to the streets this week. Dozens of D.C. public school teachers were out protesting yesterday in Upper Northwest. DCist reported that about 75 educators from Wilson High School, Dill Middle School, and Murch Elementary School were raising awareness about the failure of DCPS to sign a new contract agreement. The teachers have gone for almost 6 years without a contract, or at least 4 years without a raise. In Planet News, a state of emergency has been declared in the Canadian province of Alberta, where a massive wildfire has grown to five times its initial size and continues to rage. An estimated 1,600 homes and businesses have been destroyed, and a mandatory evacuation order was expanded late Wednesday to encompass additional communities in and around the tar sands capital of Fort McMurray. Between 80,000 and 90,000 people have fled since the fire intensified on Tuesday. And as the political ground continues to shake after the declaration of Donald Trump as the presumptive nominee of the Republican Party, little attention has been given to the scandals brewing this week among Democrats. Politico reported this week that only 1% of the $61 million that the Hillary Clinton campaign said it was raising for candidates in states has gone to those campaigns. Instead, almost all of it was recycled through the Democratic National Committee or funneled directly back to the Clinton campaign. The arrangement allowed Clinton to solicit checks of $350,000 or more from super-rich supporters at extravagant fundraisers. And the Bernie Sanders campaign says that this arrangement has allowed Clinton and the DNC to circumvent campaign finance laws. Some state Democratic officials told Politico that the setup was like a money laundering operation for Clinton. And social media is also abuzz over the YouTube video of the Chicago Board of Elections receiving data and testimony about electronic voting machines that took away 18% of the votes cast for Bernie Sanders during the Illinois Democratic primary, and then the board taking no steps to investigate. And even though Bernie Sanders won the Indiana primary convincingly, mainstream pundits were so quick to characterize the results as meaningless, given Hillary Clinton's lead in pledged and superdelegates, that CNN commentator and activist Van Jones needed to inject into the network's pro-Clinton coverage the breaking news.
For the movement, it continues to give heart to those people who say, listen, we want to be heard. And also, listen, had Hillary Clinton destroyed it in Indiana, you have an even a tougher pathway going forward. I don't think that Bernie has a shot. He is going to lose the delegate race, but he is winning the debate. in this party. And he has set the terms of the debate in this party in a way that Hillary Clinton, I think, cannot.
That would have been true, though, man, had he done, had he won or lost by a few points tonight. I think that battle.
I just don't want to take away his win. The guy that won. I just want to say, Bernie Sanders won. Is that okay for us to say he won? Bernie won. He won. Good.
Okay, now here to give his perspective on this week's election upheaval is our geopolitical analyst, author, and activist, Gerald Horn. Good morning, Gerald.
Good morning to you.
So what are your thoughts about where things stand now in the election and the ascendancy of Donald Trump?
Well, with regard to the ascendancy of Donald Trump, obviously there's a lot of discord within the ranks of the GOP. Speaker Paul Ryan of the U.S. House of Representatives has declared himself not ready to opt for Donald Trump as of yet. Mark Salter, a close advisor to Senator John McCain of Arizona, has said that there's no way he will vote for Donald Trump, and he'll vote for either a third party or for Secretary Hillary Rodham Clinton. With regard to the other side, Senator Bernie Sanders obviously has a very favorable month unfolding in May. He's expected to prevail in West Virginia. He's expected to prevail in Oregon. He may not prevail in Kentucky, but he probably will prevail in Washington, D.C. The question for Senator Sanders is, given the fact that supposedly and seemingly odds are stacked against him, what will be his path forward? Now, Donald Trump is advising that he run a third party, which perversely and ironically probably means that he won't. But Sanders supporters are having a meeting next month to determine what is going to be the path forward. Recall that after 2008, then Senator Obama had a list of 13 million names that were then folded into the Democratic National Committee. Supposedly, Senator Sanders has even more names on his list. And the question is, what will become of those Sanders supporters?
Well, it seems like, you know, I don't know if you heard some of the earlier coverage on Democracy Now! and some of the callers and some of the people in the last show, but there's a split between necessarily what Sanders wants to do and what his supporters want to do, that there are some people who just don't feel that he should fold his movement into the DNC, that Hillary Clinton basically has to earn the votes of his supporters.
Well, Senator Sanders himself is on record for the proposition that he cannot snap his fingers and command that his supporters back Senator Clinton. Obviously, there's going to be a lot of contestation at the Democratic Convention this summer as to what the platform will look like. A spanner in the works, possibly, is this question of Senator Clinton's emails and whether or not an indictment will ensue. Now, I know she dismisses that. Senator Sanders dismisses that. But if you look at the Wall Street Journal this morning, the right wing is not dismissing this at all, which means we should take it seriously.
So what kind of path forward do you see for Sanders? I know that it seems that a third party candidacy would just basically bolster any Republican candidate.
Well, it depends. I mean, I think that, surprise, surprise, progressive forces should try to take advantage of the U.S. antiquated political system for electing a president. That is to say, there is an electoral college. We already know, for example, that Texas will vote for the GOP, that Mississippi will vote for the GOP, that Louisiana will vote for the GOP. So therefore, it seems to me that that's where a third party movement should begin. And we already know that California will probably vote against the GOP, as will New York. And perhaps a third party movement should begin there. I think that it seems obvious, and why it doesn't happen continues to befuddle me.
Okay. Well, thank you for taking the time to join me on the ground this morning, Gerald.
Thank you for inviting me.
Well, there's lots happening in the DMV this weekend. Tonight, the Party for Socialism and Liberation will have a discussion on Hillary Clinton's history of racism, anti-LGBTQ bigotry and imperialism, as well as the Democratic establishment's efforts at building her up as the lesser evil. And that's at 7 p.m. at 617 Florida Avenue Northwest. And for more information, visit pslweb.org, email dc@pslweb.org, or call 202-234-2828. The Green Festival kicks off at noon today and goes through Sunday at the D.C. Convention Center at 801 Mount Vernon Place in Northwest D.C. The festival has more than 250 exhibitors, more than 50 inspirational speakers, and vegan and vegetarian food and all kinds of info about living a more sustainable lifestyle. And please join me tomorrow at the Mother's Day Peace Festival at 2 p.m. at Lafayette Square, 17th and 8th Streets Northwest in front of the White House. I'll be one of those joining Code Pink to celebrate the original Mother's Day call, a time for women to come together to organize against war and violence, including police violence against our families and our neighbors. It's a day to say disarm, disarm, disarm. And those are our headlines and happenings. When we come back, the March on May Day for Workers. Stay with us. That was the late Billy Paul on the Ground on 89.3 Pacifica Radio. I'm Esther Averam. Well, on May 1st, 1886, more than 300,000 workers in 13,000 businesses across the United States walked off their jobs in the first May Day celebration in history. At that time, there was the 8-hour movement, a movement of 8 hours of work, 8 hours of rest, and 8 hours of play. And that day, the police shot 4 protesters. And this is in Chicago. In response to this police violence, a meeting was called in Haymarket Square in Chicago a few days later on the 4th of May. And at that time, a stick of dynamite was thrown. There were 200 policemen there to put an end to the meeting. The dynamite wreaked havoc among both the demonstrators, and there was a police casualty as well as 7 casualties among the workers that were there. 4 organizers were convicted and condemned to death by hanging, though the trial was considered a sham trial. Well, those were the beginnings of May Day. And this past Sunday, marking 130 years since that first May Day, people gathered in Malcolm X Park here in D.C. and rallied about labor, but also about environmental justice, the TPP, or Trans-Pacific Partnership Treaty, and related social justice issues before they marched to the White House. Here are their voices.
All right, good afternoon, fellow workers. How are we doing today? My name is Cal Colgan. I'm the communications officer of the D.C. Industrial Workers of the World. But most importantly, I am a worker, just like each and every one of you. Now, the men jailed and executed for the labor struggles 130 years ago today weren't just fighting for the 8-hour day and just a union contract, like the mainstream unions would have you believe. They were fighting for democratic control over their working lives. And IWW seeks to carry on their legacy today. Today, the IWW is involved in organizing across all industries. Most recently, our union has helped to organize over 700 prisoners with the Incarcerated Workers Organizing Committee. We've also organized a fast food chain in Portland known as Burgerville. They just went public a few days ago. And IT workers as close to Frederick, Maryland. The DCIWW is also currently involved in solidarity work with Familias Unidas por la Justicia, a militant farm worker union in Washington State. We are also involved in various underground organizing campaigns, including a major shipping and distribution center, a local restaurant chain, and a grocery store right here in D.C. Now, Fred Hansen, who was an early 20th century wobbly, he once said, "Fellow workers, if we don't build democracy where we live and work, then the biggest ballot box in the world ain't gonna give it to us." So, my brothers and sisters, the time is extremely overdue for this labor movement to grow and to become an actual militant force for not just reform, but for revolutionary change. Join the IWW. Those of us who are in the IWW, raise your hands here. You can speak to any one of us about joining. Why don't you join our union and help us win this class war against the capitalists? Solidarity forever.
Hey everybody, how are y'all doing? I'm Margaret Flowers. I'm a co-director of PopularResistance.org. We run a bunch of different campaigns. We're a movement website, but we're running the campaign to stop the Trans-Pacific Partnership. We have a lot to celebrate this May Day because we've got workers on strike, the CWA workers on strike, Teamsters on strike. Got the 5 for 15 movement is really hot. The immigrant rights movement is really hot. There's a lot going on, but we still have a lot of problems. 40% of workers are in like contract positions without benefits or job security. We have growing poverty. More than 51% of workers are earning $30,000 a year or less. We have a lot of work to do, but one thing in particular that we have to fight is the Trans-Pacific Partnership. This is an international agreement that's been finalized, and Obama is going to try to send it through the lame duck Congress in November. This is really critical to him because it's how he's going to fund his three major presidential centers. But it's really critical for us to stop it because it's going to drive a global race to the bottom in workers' rights and wages. So if you don't know about the TPP, I've got cards here that tell you information about it. Either way, I've also got cards here because we're organizing the No Lame Duck Uprising to stop the TPP from being voted on this fall. So you need to join this. Join the No Lame Duck Uprising. Let's make it impossible for them to bring this to a vote and finally kill these trade deals that are driving a race to the bottom and demand trade that respects people and the planet. I'm also running for U.S. Senate, so if you live in Maryland, I'm Green Party. Vote for me. Thanks.
Hey everybody, I'm Hendrik Voss. I work with School of the Americas Watch here in Washington, D.C. We are a nonviolent grassroots organization trying to shut down the U.S. Army training school known as the SOA, School of the Americas, or Western Hemisphere Institute for Security Cooperation, out now renamed very Orwellian. So it's a training school that trains Latin American soldiers in military intelligence, counterinsurgency training. They had manuals that advocated the use of torture, execution, and blackmail, and the arrest of family members of people who are suspected subversives. And also they are very clear in their torture manuals who those suspected subversives are. There's a whole section that talks about that suspected subversives are people who do union organizing or recruiting, people who speak out and say that the government has failed to meet the basic needs of the people. And it's so, yeah, very much people who do the work that we do here in Latin America can very much become targets of SOA terror. Our work is not just about shutting down the School of the Americas, but it's about shutting down the entire system that makes a school like this possible. It's a fight against militarism, it's a fight against racism, patriarchy, and exploitation. So we got to come together, so their way of controlling and their way of keeping the system in place is military violence, military repression. And our antidote for that, our tools, are international solidarity and to be together united in the struggle against capitalism. Thanks so much.
Good afternoon, everyone. It's good to be with you on International Working Day to represent the situation of working people in Iran. Despite what the media says about Iran, we want you to know that the conditions for working people in Iran are not so very different than here in America. We are right now a small group here we are trying to show you a small portion of what's happening in Iran to the workers and the political prisoners, teachers, and we are representing some of those, some of the hundreds of people that are right now are in prison, or many of them are in hunger strike. I'm representing Amir Amirghului. I am voice of Amir Amirghului because I am a political activist and I fight to stop child labor. I was sentenced to 21 years in jail. The conditions I face in prison are so terrible that I am now on a dry hunger strike.
My name is Jafar Azimzadeh, the president of Free Union of Workers in Iran. I am in jail sentenced to 6 years in prison for standing up for workers' rights. I, alongside Abdi, this is this guy, a teacher trade association, have started a hunger strike on April 29 to coincide with May Day as an expression of solidarity with workers wide world.
My name is Ismail Abedi, a leader of the Iranian Teachers Union. I help to lead nationwide rallies to protest the low wages that leaves most teachers below the poverty line. As a result of my activism, I was sentenced to 6 years in prison.
This is me, Bahmane Ibrahimzadeh. I'm a child right and labor right activist and a political prisoner in Iran because I refused to stop my activism. Even while in jail, I have been subjected to the physical and psychological torture.
I'm Saeed Shirzad, a worker and child rights activist. I was arrested at my workplace and sentenced to 5 years in jail for being an activist. They put me in solitary confinement, where they torture me and threaten me with execution every day.
Working people in Iran ask for your solidarity and we make our demands for equality and for the just and humane society for every people on the earth.
Happy May Day, everybody. My name is Patricia Connor. I'm a bus operator for Metro for the past 9 years. I'm a member of ATU Local 689. Many of us are here today because we're angry. I'm here because I'm angry. We're angry about racist police murders, the gutting of pensions, and more war. This is why we have to celebrate May Day. May Day is the best day of the year, a day that symbolizes the international struggle against the ruling class. So as angry as I am, I'm also happy, because I look to history, my coworkers, and international movements to be inspired. The history of the working class is one of fighting back. The history of the working class isn't relying on politicians. Politicians want us to be cynical and think that our only hope for change comes from them. But we know this is not true. We know politicians work for the rich and can never fundamentally help us. We must help ourselves by organizing and taking to the streets. At Metro, we've seen the attacks that workers are under. We've seen the outcome of the union strategy of relying on lawyers and politicians. We've seen the union leadership sell out new workers. The labor movement in this country is suffering because of a lack of militancy and unwillingness to organize workers in key industrial areas to strike. Unions and workers must be organizing against racism in order to win and grow. So how do we do this? The ruling class makes millions of dollars in profit from racism. So racism is inherent to capitalism. The fight against racism must also be the fight against capitalism. We must raise class consciousness so workers know their enemy is not the riding public, immigrant workers, or workers in other countries. Our enemy is the rich. In 1978, Metro workers went on strike for 6 days. We showed the world that we're powerful, that what we do matters. We must not forget this history. The measure of May Day is not what we do today, but what we're moved to do tomorrow and the next day. In the words of someone more famous than me, the rich will never let us vote away their riches. So let's direct this anger where it needs to be, the throats of the rich. Thank you. I think we might have some Brazilian workers coming up now. All right.
Hi, everyone. It's good to see everyone here in solidarity with labor movements around the world. We, in particular, are Brazilians, expats living here in Washington, D.C. I don't know if everyone's aware of what's going on there. We have an imminent coup in our country, and the people whose rights are being thrown under the bus are the workers. You know, we have a democratically elected president who won with more than 50 million votes, and within a week and a half, she could be removed in a completely legally illegitimate impeachment process. So we're here in solidarity with labor movements around the world and also in Brazil. I don't know if you know my t-shirt. We are also with Friends of MST. MST is one of the biggest agricultural agrarian reform movements in the world with more than 1.5 million members. And, you know, their rights are also being thrown under the bus. So we're here in solidarity with all of those groups.
I'll just try to add something to Luisa. My name is Marcos. But what we have in Brazil, we have a bunch of criminals that is trying to impeach a president that against her there is no corruption accusation at all. They have fiscal management issues that they are trying to use that and as an excuse to move an impeachment process. And this bunch of criminals, together with the right wing in the parliament, they are trying to do a coup d'etat. That's why we argue it's a coup d'etat, and we ask for the international community support for that. And being an illegal process, they have an agenda. They already published an agenda for this new illegitimate and illegal government, that it is a typical neoliberal agenda, which means privatizations, less labor regulations. So that's why we are here together with you for the 1st of May. And we ask for your support against this coup that is happening in Brazil, and so the workers can get united. Thank you.
My name is Mike Golash. I'm an organizer for the Progressive Labor Party in Washington. We've been organizing these May Day marches here in D.C. since 1972, you know, basically to celebrate the struggles of the working class over the last 150 years. It all began at Haymarket Square in 1886 with the murder of a number of workers who were fighting for the 8-hour day. It continued during the First World War when on May Day, workers in Europe refused to fight the war. On some fronts, it took a couple of weeks before the German and French and English bosses could get the workers back to fighting each other. That was the power of May Day. In the 1930s, we saw tremendous May Day marches all around the world to fight the rise of Nazism in Germany and fascism in Italy. We saw in this country millions of workers marching to free the Scottsboro Boys, to fight against the Ku Klux Klan, against racism. And then, on April 30th, 1945, the red flag of revolution and fighting fascism was raised over the Reichstag in Germany, defeating the end of Nazism and bringing the conclusion to World War II. The Soviet armies had sacrificed millions of their members fighting fascism and defeating Nazism. For us to be free today to the extent that we are, we owe a tremendous tribute to those millions of workers who took up arms to defeat fascism in Europe. In the 1980s, we marched against apartheid in South Africa on May Day. Tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of workers throughout South Africa and around the world took to the streets on May 1st of the late 1980s and early 90s to help bring down the fascist apartheid regime in South Africa. So the tradition of May Day is long and strong. It represents the interests of the working class fighting back against fascism, against racism, against sexism, and above all, against capitalism. Let us make no mistake about it. The world today is in crisis. There's a political crisis. There's an economic crisis. There's an environmental crisis. and all these crises which are doing tremendous harm to workers in Iran, in Afghanistan, in Iraq, in Syria, in Brazil, in Africa, in every spot in the world. The system of capitalism is collapsing, but as it collapses, it's not going without a fight. It is trying to take with it the lives of millions and millions of working people throughout this world. And we, the working class, united in this country and around the world, stands a chance of defeating that and building for ourselves a better world for tomorrow. And that's what May Day is all about. It's projecting that image of a society which is not based on private profit, which is not based on individualism and getting ahead and screwing your neighbor, but rather it's a society which is based on communist ideas, the idea that the working class of the world can get along, that despite our differences in gender, in race, in creed, in national origin, that we as a class can build a better world without the capitalists, without inequality, without racism and sexism. That is our mission. That's what we must commit our lives to accomplishing. This is not a long, this is not an easy or short struggle, but it's a long historical process which we have to engage in if we are going to save humanity, if we are going to build a better world for ourselves and our children. And that's what we march for today. Yes, it was raining earlier, and now it's cleared up a little bit, but that's a small sacrifice we need to make to participate in this action today. The world is in crisis, and it's in crisis because of the needs of capitalism. There's many people that think we can do other things than destroy capitalism. Bernie Sanders is out telling people, vote for me and we'll make a difference. Hillary Clinton is saying, vote for me and we'll make a difference. Donald Trump is saying the same thing. In Brazil, you got right-wing fascists who are trying to convince workers that if you vote for me or you let me carry out this coup, things will get better. In Syria, in Iraq, and Iran, the same struggle is going on. Everyone is trying to convince people there's some alternative to saving capitalism. That's just not true. We just need to look at the history of the world in the 20th century. How many people died because of the inequities, because of the profit system of capitalism? Hundreds of millions of people. How many will more die in the 21st century unless we do something about it? So we stand here today committed to building a movement of the working class which is capable of tearing down this system of capitalism and building a new society free of racism and sexism, free of inequality, a system without wages, a system where working people join together to build a better world. So as we march to the White House and we march in support of the Verizon strikers and we march in support of workers all around the world that are struggling against this racist, imperialist system, remember, dark night does not last forever. The sun is rising. We are becoming a more stronger and more powerful movement. And the day of capitalism, its role in human history, is soon to end and be replaced by a more egalitarian, communist-type society where working people are united and work together to preserve humanity and make this a better world. Thank you very much.
How's it going, everybody? My name is Jervin Alari. I'm a part of the Environmental Justice Committee. It's a committee committed to fighting environmental racism and injustice here in the city. Folks, you know, you've been looking in the media. Flint has been all over the TV screens, but actually, Flint is actually going on across the country. And Flint is also going on here in Washington, D.C. as well. Just 2 weeks ago, we just caught wind that students in public schools here in D.C. had high levels of lead. A few days ago at MLK Elementary School, the faucets were leaking brown water. And so what we did on Friday was we actually took bottles of brown water and we delivered them to each and every single council member and let them know that this is unacceptable. And so we also got commitments from council members that they're going to hold a hearing on this in June, and also they're going to actually commit to modernizing our schools. Because actually, environmental racism is actually tied to unions as well. One reason why we have this lead crisis is because folks are trying to cut funding from the public school budget. And so actually there's a lot of private school and charter school advocates who fought last year to take money out of the public school budget and put it in the soccer stadium, which led to the lead crisis. And so we encourage everyone to get involved because there are a lot of environmental racism issues here in D.C. and they're definitely tied to unions. They're definitely tied to the lack of livable wages here in the city.
We're also concerned about green jobs. So green jobs for environmental justice are important. There's capacity building. There's so many programs out there that are framed as community programs for the community. And what we want to advocate as the Environmental Justice Committee within the Sierra Club is to really bring in the solar jobs and really empower the communities to have more of these jobs. There's jobs also in waste management. So we're here also on behalf of the waste management people that are the workers that are really doing a lot of work in the city. So it's really important to keep in mind that the green jobs are something that we must demand and that we also have to protect, and we have to give those to marginalized communities.
Thank you.
Happy May Day, everybody. My name is Heather, and I'm with the Party for Socialism and Liberation. We are so honored and excited and energized to be out on the streets, not only in D.C., but in San Francisco, in New York City, in Chicago, in Albuquerque, and across the South, in cities all around the country where workers have decided that we're not going to take it anymore. We're not going to take the status quo. We're not going to take a system that plagues our young people with hundreds of thousands of dollars in debt. We're not going to take a system where people are shot down in the street, where kids are shot by law enforcement on a regular basis just for being black, Latino, people of color. We're not going to take a system where women are imprisoned for trying to stand up for their rights to their own health care, to our own bodies, and to our own families. Brothers and sisters, this is not the first time in history that people in the United States have stood up. We've been fighting for these same things for hundreds of years, and every single gain that we've made, be it in the women's rights movement, in the LGBTQ movement, in the immigrant rights movement, or in the workers' rights movement, has always been because of our power in the streets. Now, we see with the phenomenon of this crazy election cycle, with the Donald Trump campaign, with the right-wing Democrats suppressing the vote all across the country, we see that we still have a struggle ahead of us. We have a real struggle against the racists that seek to divide us and seek to build walls. We have a struggle internationally to stand in solidarity and fight against imperialist intervention and war around the world. So regardless of who's in the White House come 2017, we have to continue this struggle and we have to bring it to the next level. So I encourage everybody to stay involved. Check out our newspaper. We're reporting on immigrant rights and May Day protests all around the country. And we have a beautiful graphic that sums up what I was just saying. And that just says, our wall is built of solidarity. And this is the kind of wall that we need to construct across not only the United States, but solidarity between workers around the world. So stand up with us, and we look forward to seeing you in the streets and marching with you.
My name is Terry Richardson. I am president of Communication Workers of America, Local 2336. In case you don't know, we are on strike from Verizon. We have been this is our 18th day being out, and we are going to stay out for as long as it takes. Our reasons for going out is the reasons why you all are here, corporate greed. This company, Verizon, makes $1.8 billion a month. $1.8 billion a month, but they want the employees who built that network, who built that company, to give all concessions. We will not stand for that any longer. We're tired and we're on the street. Whatever your fight, whatever your cause, we stand with you, we applaud you, and with one voice, America will wake up and realize we are America. We are what makes America great. We make these companies what they are. And if they're not willing to share it, then we're going to have to show them that we are worth them sharing the profits that we help them make. Solidarity forever. We love you and we're with you.
If you're just tuning in, you just heard voices from the March on May Day for Workers held this past Sunday afternoon at Malcolm X Park in Northwest D.C. This is On the Ground, Voices of Resistance from the Nation's Capital on 89.3 WPFW Pacifica Radio in the Nation's Capital. I'm Esther Verm, and we're going to take a break now. When we come back, the strike by Verizon workers. Stay with us.
Stand up, all victims of oppression, for the tyrants fear your might. Don't cling so hard to your possession, for you have nothing if you have no right. Let racist ignorance be ended, for respect makes the empires fall. Freedom is privilege extended unless enjoyed by one and all. So come brothers and sisters, for the struggle carries on.
The internationality,
unites the world in song. So comrades, come rally, for this is the time and place. The international working class unites the human race. Let no one build walls to divide us. Walls of hatred, no walls of stone.
That was the D.C. Labor Corps singing the International at the March on May Day for Workers held Sunday at Malcolm X Park in Northwest D.C. This is On the Ground, Voices of Resistance on 89.3 WPFW Pacifica Radio. Well, yesterday, Communication Workers of America activists and allies held a national day of action to support 39,000 Verizon workers who are on strike to stop Verizon from offshoring jobs and to keep good jobs and quality service in our communities. More than 400 protests were held nationwide at Verizon wireless stores and other locations in dozens of cities, including here in D.C. In New York City, some 2,000 workers, supporters, and elected leaders marched to a Verizon wireless store on Wall Street. At the Verizon annual shareholders meeting in Albuquerque, 250 Verizon workers, CWA members, and allies protested outside the meeting. Inside, CWA activists spoke on shareholder resolutions and presented more than 300,000 petitions from customers to CEO Lowell McAdam. Later, 15 union members and community supporters were arrested after they draped a 70-foot banner reading, "Verizon, good jobs, no greed," across the Rio Grande Boulevard, and then lay down on the banner to block traffic. My guest for this second half of the show is Terry Richardson, president of Local 2336 here in D.C. of the Communication Workers of America. He's actually also the last voice you heard at the May Day rally on Sunday here. Welcome to On the Ground, Terry.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. So tell us why Verizon workers are on strike.
Well, we're on strike to protect our jobs. Verizon wants to outsource our jobs. We want to keep our good middle-class paying jobs so we can provide for our families.
How can they outsource jobs? I know most of the people are technicians, so how can they outsource your jobs?
Well, they can outsource the call centers. When you call in to order service or repair service, those calls are now being sent to the Philippines, to the Central American countries, over, you know, to the, not the Middle East, but you know, the Far East. Mm-hmm. This is where they're sending those jobs, and they're closing call centers, which, you know, they have to move people miles and miles away from home, irregardless of their children, their families, and things like that. As far as the outside people, they can't outsource the job out of the country, but they are trying to use contractors to do our jobs, our bargain for union jobs.
And how can they do that? Because I'm sure that you have some clauses in your contract that say that these are union jobs.
Well, that's why we're on strike, because it is in our contract that you can only contract out a small portion of the job. That's if we're not available to do the jobs. But they want to gut the contract where they can use contractors anytime and as much as they want to, which will eventually drive us out of work.
So give me an example for how this will help them. I mean, obviously, they're going to pay these contractors a lot less.
Yes.
And the other kinds of benefits that you have in your contract, they don't have to honor that. So how much do you see that they're trying to cut what they would pay a worker?
Well, the fiber optic network, which the public knows as Fios, when they are going to wire up a location, instead of paying us or giving us the work to do at our current salary, they will contract that work out. That's going in, either you have to dig a trench to lay the underground lines, or you have to put in new telephone poles to string it up on the poles to come into the neighborhood, mm-hmm. You know, depending on how the neighborhood is serviced. Those are bargained for jobs.
Union jobs.
Union
right.
jobs. Contracting that out, you can pay them way less than what you're paying us. You don't have to provide benefits to them.
Okay.
So, you know, that's a way that hurts us. It hurts the public because as they're out there now, they're so-called contingency workers, there are a lot of safety violations going on out there. So it's not only putting those people at risk, it's putting the public at risk.
Okay.
There's been incidents up around Pennsylvania and New York where they dropped a telephone pole on someone's house.
Wow.
So that you know, that's just one instance of mm-hmm. you know, contracting out the work, and you're going to get what you pay for, basically.
So at the top of the show, I played Vera Folly, who I spoke to when I left the show. She was out picketing on L Street
yes.
Last week, and I played her interview at the top of the show. And she talked about how Verizon wants to be able to send relocate technicians like at will, and it's the technician's responsibility to pay for this transportation to
yes.
go to another site to be an installer, I guess.
Yes.
What's that about? Sounds crazy.
Well, they right now, again, our contract calls for a specific distance they can send us, for a specific time that they can send us. Where right now, they want to, again, gut that language in the contract and be able to send us anywhere in the footprint. Now, you're talking from the New England states down to Virginia for 120 days at a time, irregardless of our family. We either uproot our family or we be away from our family for that length of time. Then after a certain amount of time being back here, they can send you back there again.
Hmm.
That's
for a different place.
Or a different place, yes. But I mean, who wants to go away from their family for 4 months at a time?
Right. And you would have to pay.
We would have to pay our transportation. We have to pay for our lodging and our food. Right now, if they have what they call sending us out on loan. Let's take the Tidewater area, for instance. If it gets hit with the hurricane, they will loan us to that area to rebuild and get people back in service.
Right.
But we're compensated. For
right.
going down there, and it's for no more than 2 weeks at a time. That's 10 days. And then they send you back home and send fresh people down there.
Right.
The way they want to do it now, they want to send you out again for 4 months at a time. And you either go or you don't have a job, because that is where your job is now.
So she also mentioned them not wanting to pay the health care for retirees.
They're trying to take that. We have retirees. In fact, my father is one of them. He, after 34 years in the company, retired in the early 90s. He earned that health care.
Mm-hmm.
But now they're trying to take that from him. And you know, not just him. I'm just speaking from personal experience on that. But they're trying to take the retirees' health care that they have earned, that has been bargained for. It has been in existence since this company has been in existence. But they're not getting a return off the retirees, so they don't want to pay that anymore.
A return. So, I mean, those of us who have elderly parents who are fortunate to still have our parents, I mean, they know that this additional health care kind of acts as a supplement because
yes.
very often your Medicare does not pay everything and you can have this additional funding for your well-being.
Yes.
So this is what they want to take away,
yes.
this additional
yes.
supplement. Okay. So I know yesterday there was a big day of action, like I mentioned in the intro. And so tell me what impact you thought that had. I guess a lot of unions Other allies came out to support you out on F Street,
yes.
Around 13th and F in Northwest.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I would love to give all of them a shout out.
You can give a few shout outs.
I don't want to exclude anybody, because everybody deserves. I would just say the labor community here in Washington, D.C. stepped up, did a tremendous job, not mainly, but ATU came out in full force, the Amalgamated Transit Union mm-hmm. came out in full force. We shut down a city block, mm-hmm. and that's not an easy thing to do. But we had upwards of 200 people out there yesterday. The teachers union, nurses union, the Teamsters, again, the transit union, Jobs with Justice, and I apologize for anyone I left off.
That's all right. I'm sure they know that you're with them in spirit. So what kind of impact, do you think that Verizon got the message? I mean, it was not just here in D.C., but it was around the country. All these actions.
Yes.
What will it take to bring them back to the table with the right type of contract?
I feel if we keep doing what we're doing, if we keep getting the support from the other unions throughout the country, we will eventually win this. And a win for us is a win for everybody.
So I haven't seen much media coverage of the strike. I know there was good coverage yesterday. Well, more than there had been before. So how much do you think that this lack of media attention has impacted Verizon's unwillingness to come to the table with the right kind of contract?
Well, I think we're getting media coverage. Of course, we can use more. Mm-hmm. But I believe the company is filling it because their approval rating is at an all-time low over the last 3 years. This is the lowest it's been. So they're feeling it. The action that they did out at the shareholders meeting, that brought attention. That's halfway across the country. But they are feeling it, and they are an image-conscious company, mm-hmm. and their image is taking a hit, so they are feeling it.
So they had a petition. You all had a petition signed by, 300,000 customers?
I believe customers and employees, yes.
Okay, for them to come to the table with
We've had a letter sent to the CEO, Lowell McAdams, from 20 U.S. senators mm-hmm. with their signature on it, telling him to come to the table and bargain fairly. So he understands, or he should understand, that this is a national thing. You cannot continue to treat people this way. You cannot continue to do the things that you do and expect to continue to be a profitable company.
So this is about basically keeping middle class jobs with benefits and things that have allowed people to establish a decent standard of living.
Yes.
You said there are about 15,000 people in the DMV, what we call the district, Maryland, Virginia area, but also going south to southern.
As far down as the southern tip of Virginia, and we're up into the New England states, Boston on down, Massachusetts on down.
But in terms of this area,
it's
about 15,000.
About 15, yes.
And so this is the fourth week of, we're entering the fourth week of the strike.
Yes.
I'm sure this is taking a toll. How are people able to manage being out on strike this long?
We believe in what we're out for. And I believe that is the biggest thing. We believe we are right on this side of the fight.
And I do know that there is a fund that people can contribute if they would like to support the workers, like a strike fund or whatever.
Yes, it just came. They just put it out yesterday, and I apologize. I don't have the website, the address with me, but I can get it to you, and I can get it out to the public.
Well, if people go to the Communication Workers of America website.
It should be on there, yes.
It'll be on there,
yes.
So you can always go to that website and check that out. Okay, so I think that I'll have to start to wrap up now. But is there anything else that you would like the public to know that we didn't talk about?
I would first like to apologize to the public for any disruption in their service, any inconvenience that they're experiencing from this strike. That is not our intentions. Our mm-hmm. intentions is just to get the company to deal with us fairly.
Mm-hmm.
We will do everything we can to get it done quickly so we can get back out to servicing the public. But for my workers out there, my members, message to them is to stand strong. We're going to be one day longer, one day stronger.
All right. Well, I've been speaking to Terry Richardson, president of Local 2336 here in D.C. of the Communication Workers of America. Thank you for joining me today, Terry.
Thank you for having me.
Well, that will do it for us on the Ground. Thanks again to Terry Richardson of CWA and to Gerald Horn earlier on the show. Thanks to Chantel James for her reporting at the March on May Day for Workers. And thanks to our engineer, Mike Nasella. Thank you so much for listening. You can reach the show at onthegroundshow.org, where you can listen to all of our shows. Please don't forget to like our Facebook and Twitter pages at On The Ground Show. I just found out that there's actually another On The Ground Media on Facebook. So if you go to Facebook, our page is the one that has the green letters, and there's a picture of me and my son out kind of at a rally. So look for that one. Please like us at On The Ground Show. It says show on it also. Also, I think next week we'll be in our spring membership drive. So please sign on and check out the website, listen in next week, and support us during the spring membership drive. Until next week, raise your voice out there. Peace. Yeah.